Here's a scene that shatters our assumptions. Thousands of people in Harlem, dressed for work, waiting at bus stops on a Monday morning in 1989. This wasn't supposed to exist. The prevailing narrative painted inner cities as jobless ghettos, where welfare dependency ruled and work was a foreign concept. But what if the story we've been telling ourselves about poverty is fundamentally wrong? What if the problem isn't that poor people won't work, but that work itself has failed them? This is the uncomfortable truth at the heart of America's working poor, 7.4 million people who clock in, follow the rules, and still can't escape poverty. They're invisible not because they're hiding, but because acknowledging them forces us to confront a disturbing reality. In the world's wealthiest nation, playing by the rules doesn't guarantee survival. Think about who comes to mind when you hear poverty. Probably not someone in a work uniform rushing to catch a bus. The working poor occupy a strange liminal space in American consciousness. Too employed to provoke outrage like welfare recipients, too poor to have political clout, too scattered to organize like traditional labor. Yet they're everywhere, changing hospital linens, flipping burgers, bagging groceries, cleaning office buildings after dark. They live perpetually on the edge, where one sick child means unemployment, one missed rent payment means eviction, one car breakdown means catastrophe. In Harlem's burger barns, 70% of workers are over 19, with 35% well into adulthood. Not suburban teenagers earning spending money, but adults desperately seeking any foothold in a hostile economy. They already share America's fierce commitment to the work ethic. They need wages that actually cover rent. The numbers tell a stark story. Single mothers face poverty rates 4 times higher than married couples. High school dropouts experience 16% poverty rates versus 2% for college graduates. Race compounds everything. White workers have 5.4% poverty rates compared to 13.3% for African Americans and 14.6% for Hispanics. Over 70% of the youngest Harlem workers attend school, with half expecting to attend college, creating a cruel gap between dreams and reality. For immigrant families, survival requires multiple wage earners, with elderly relatives providing childcare while receiving SSI and food stamps. Health crises become employment crises. Taking your child to the doctor can mean losing your job. Middle-class parents have sick days and backup childcare. The working poor have none of these buffers. In suburban McDonald's, help wanted signs stay posted for weeks. In Harlem, the same jobs draw 14 applicants for every opening. This supply-demand imbalance depresses wages. The same job paying 7+ hourly in affluent areas pays minimum wage in Harlem. Welfare reform pushed thousands into an already saturated job market, driving wages down for everyone at the bottom. Personal connections dominate this job market. Michelle, a 13-year Burger Barn veteran, became cautious about vouching after a cousin she recommended was fired for stealing. William got his job through his mother's 19-year work history, noting, "It's not what you know, it's who you know." These networks filter candidates but perpetuate inequality. If everyone in your network is poor, connections can't lift you out. Mick Job suggests worthless work, dead-end, skill-free, degrading. But workers embrace traditional values of work and self-sufficiency as moral defense against stigma. When neighborhood friends mock their uniforms, they respond with quiet dignity. It's a job. You are making money. They're sitting on the corner doing what they're doing. The workplace becomes refuge where their worth is recognized. Managers counsel workers facing peer criticism, crucial in neighborhoods where crab down syndrome operates, with peers actively dragging successful individuals back into failure. Fast food work supposedly requires no skill, a comforting lie dismissing workers' labor as valueless. Reality? Burger Barn demands considerable expertise. During rush hours, workers coordinate multiple tasks, cooking various items, assembling orders, following health regulations, improvising when equipment fails. They calibrate supply and demand, avoiding waste that cuts razor-thin margins. The job requires remarkable people skills and cross-cultural competence in multilingual workplaces. Yet neither employers nor workers recognize these skills as transferable, and racial barriers significantly hinder advancement into coveted government positions. Education remains the universal aspiration. Workers like Danielle, a single mother of five on minimum wage, see it as their only path. Getting an education is very important. That's the only way you can survive today. Managers actively support this, monitoring academic performance, visiting schools, checking report cards, providing tutoring, even offering bonuses for good grades. Some withhold paychecks until after school to prevent truancy. For workers like Tawana, this oversight motivates. I don't think I could have made it in school without a job because that was my inspiration. Yet structural barriers prevent action. Workers with family support, like David, whose relatives provided housing and food, can invest earnings in credentials. He completed a $4,000 trade school course while working full shifts, eventually tripling his income. Workers like Anna must support immigrant families instead, making advancement impossible despite identical aspirations. Escaping poverty depends not on work ethic or intelligence, but on whether your family can afford to let you invest in yourself. The City University of New York ended its 129-year tuition-free policy in 1976. Now, community college students pay $2,500 annually from households earning under $20,000. These increases pushed poor students out precisely when studies showed tremendous employment and wage gains for CUNY graduates. We closed the ladder just as people were climbing it. Stereotypes miss a crucial reality. Harlem youth start working at 13 to 15 years before suburban peers, often despite having unemployed parents. Rather than following parental examples, they deliberately choose different paths. Latoya's family exemplifies devoted support networks, sisters who secured each other burger barn jobs, covered shifts for 5 years, and gathered for celebrations. Young workers spend earnings on necessities and household expenses, with multiple family members pooling resources for survival. Despite narratives about absent fathers, men remain vital. Though not fitting census definitions, uncles, fathers, brothers, and boyfriends provide regular financial support and time. Jamal endures long bus commutes to low-status jobs supporting his common-law wife. Salvador works two jobs for Carmen and their daughter. These aren't deadbeat dads. They're men struggling to fulfill obligations in an unforgiving economy. After 9 years, Kayesha became a burger barn swing manager at $6 hourly instead of $5, hardly transformative. Carmen experienced dramatic change. Married with a baby, she and Salvador both advanced professionally while she completed 3 community college semesters, leveraging her cultural capital as a schoolteacher's daughter. Then there's Jamal, who simply vanished. Apartment empty, employers clueless, foster care silent. Perhaps he and Kathy reached Tallahassee, escaping poverty. Despite his difficult background, Jamal showed tremendous potential. His disappearance haunts the narrative. We'll never know if his story ended in triumph or tragedy. The working poor aren't asking for handouts. They're already working multiple jobs. The Earned Income Tax Credit directly helps by reducing tax burdens, effectively adding $2 per hour for minimum wage workers with 2 children and lifting 4.5 million Americans above poverty. It's the cheapest, least bureaucratic solution, yet faces periodic reduction efforts. Employer consortia could create escape routes from low-wage work. Entry-level employers recommend reliable workers to a special pool, while higher-paying consortium partners commit to hiring and training from it. Workers gain mobility, entry-level employers attract talent, and higher-tier businesses get pre-vetted employees, enlightened self-interest, not charity. Comprehensive programs prove even more effective. Milwaukee's New Hope Project provided transitional jobs, health insurance, childcare help, and earning supplements. 56% of participants worked full-time 2 years later. San Antonio's Project Quest trained unemployed high school graduates for in-demand jobs, boosting annual earnings by $4,923 to $7,457. These investments pay for themselves through increased tax revenue and decreased social costs. Childcare investment is critical. New York City subsidizes only 14% of eligible children, leaving working poor parents struggling to find reliable, affordable care needed to stay employed. The working poor labor in jobs we depend on daily, They cook our food, clean our hospitals, bag our groceries, care for our elderly, yet earn wages so low they remain below the poverty line even working full-time. This isn't a failure of character. It's a failure of our economic system to honor the social contract. Work hard and you'll survive. We can continue pretending these workers are invisible, or we can recognize their struggle, reveal something broken in how we've organized our economy. The solutions exist. The earned income tax credit, employer consortia, comprehensive support programs, expanded childcare, stronger unions. These aren't radical demands. They're basic acknowledgments that full-time work should provide a livable wage. What's really at stake is our national identity. We claim to value work above all else, to believe in the dignity of labor and the promise of opportunity. But when millions work full-time and still can't afford rent, when parents must choose between taking their sick child to the doctor and keeping their job, our actions betray our values. The working poor aren't asking for radical redistribution. They're asking us to make good on our promise that in America, if you work hard and play by the rules, you can build a decent life. Right now, for millions, that promise is a lie. We have the knowledge and resources to make it true. What we need is the will to act.